So we're in Ephesians chapter 6 tonight. If you'll grab a Bible and open there. Ephesians chapter 6. So this morning, we talked about how this passage beginning in chapter 5, end of chapter 5, rather, encourages us to be unified with our families, and how that's just as important, if not more important, in walking according to our calling than it is to be unified as a local congregation. So we began this morning, which I think this morning's lesson I referred to as this evening's lesson. If you didn't catch that, don't worry about it. But in chapter 5, verse 21, we established that this is really the theme of this passage, being subject to one another in the fear of Christ. And so we talked about how that plays out in the marriage relationship, that yes, the wife is to be in subjection to her husband, but the husband is to love his wife, which is a way of subjecting his will, his interests, to that of his wife. And so the theme really goes into chapter 6 as well, continues into this section. So I want to make just a few big picture observations as we kind of look at this from a 30,000-foot view. The structure of this passage is like this. So Paul addresses the wives first in chapter 5, verse 22. Then he addresses the husbands. Then in chapter 6, verse 1, he addresses children. Then the fathers in verse 4. And then slaves in verse 5. And then finally, he addresses masters in verse 9. Now, looking at that, just think about that for a minute. Do you notice any patterns? Any patterns in that relationship, in that structure there? I see two patterns. I don't know if these are significant or not, but I just throw these out there for your consideration. I don't know if these are deliberate, the Holy Spirit is you know, deliberately making a point in this pattern or not, or if this is just coincidence. Consider, first of all, that Paul begins with the marriage relationship. He begins with the most intimate relationship, and he moves to a less intimate relationship, the parent-child relationship, and then moves to the even less intimate relationship between slaves and masters. So I think the point we can make from that, if this is deliberate, is that the foundation of a unified home begins where? Begins in the marriage. A unified family starts with a unified marriage. Second of all, notice also that Paul goes back and forth in each of these as he moves from marriage to parent-child to slave-master relationship. He goes back and forth. He begins in each one by addressing the one who is in the subordinate position. And then he goes and talks to the one who is in the authority, the position of authority. And so the point that we made this morning is that even those who are in positions of authority, like the husband as the head of the wife, and tonight as we're going to see the fathers and the masters, yes, you're in a position of authority over someone, but what that means is not that you can be domineering, but that you are loving and you serve like Christ serves. So our attitude toward authority is completely changed. How do people in the world look at authority? They looked at it the same way in Jesus' day. Jesus said the Gentiles lorded over you. But it's not that way among you. If you want to become great, you become a servant. And so same is the case here. Christ-like sacrificial service is the common denominator in all of these relationships. Authority is not domination. It's not tyranny. Nor is it something to rebel against. Think about that as well. God made these structures the way they are. God put husband as the head of the wife. He's the one who designed it this way. So authority is not something to buck against or rebel against either. One more thing as we look at this is that in each of these relationships, you see a phrase or something like this phrase, as to the Lord. In every single one of these, you see, okay, the command is given to serve or to love or to be in subjection, and then the phrase is as to the Lord. So the wives, in verse 22 of chapter 5, are to be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. Husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. In the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And in verse 5, as to Christ. Slaves, be obedient to your masters in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ. And then masters are reminded that you have a master in heaven as well. So the point that I'm making is this goes back to this idea in chapter 5, verse 21, of that we are to be in subjection to one another in the fear of Christ. Every relationship we have is defined by, ultimately, our relationship with God. We are servants of each other because we fear Christ, because of who we are in relationship with Him. So those are just some patterns that I noticed in this whole section here. But let's begin. We've read some of these verses already, but let's just read this section, chapter 6, verses 1 through 9. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you, and that you may live long on the earth. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in the sincerity of your heart, as to Christ. Not by way of eye service, as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will render service, as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. And masters, do the same things to them and give up threatening, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. So Paul begins by addressing the children, and what he says to them is, obey your parents in the Lord. Now, what does he mean by that phrase, in the Lord? It takes us back to a phrase we've talked about this morning. Wives, be subject to your husbands as to the Lord. I think it means something similar there. He's not saying to children that you obey your parents to the extent that they obey Christ, or to the extent that they're teaching you to obey Christ, although I think that's true. I mean, if your parents were to tell you to go out and rob a bank, obviously that's not something you're going to do. So it's true, it's a true principle in the Bible that we obey God rather than men. That's what Peter says in the book of Acts. But I don't think that that's the case here. I don't think that's the point that he's making. I think in this passage, Paul is assuming that the parents are Christians. And so the parents are not going to go tell their children to go out and rob a bank. That should be a given in this passage. The point of this passage, I think, is that you obey your parents because that's what it takes to please the Lord. Because you want to please God. You want to make God happy. You want to please God. So because of that, you obey your parents because of your desire to please the Lord. So in the other situation, it would be like a child being told by his dad, you go upstairs and you clean your room. That's kind of the go-to example, right? And so the child goes up there. He doesn't want to clean his room, but he says, I'm going to pick up my Bible and see if there's any place in this book that says I have to clean my room. And he doesn't find anything, but he finds 1 Thessalonians 5:17, which says, pray without ceasing. So he says to himself, I don't want to clean my room, so instead I'm going to obey the Lord and I'm going to pray without ceasing. And so he goes downstairs and his dad asks him, did you clean your room? Well, no, I prayed instead. Has he really obeyed the Lord? Has he really obeyed his parents in the Lord? No, because ultimately the Lord would expect him to clean his room. Silly example, but the point I think is that you obey your parents because of your desire to please the Lord. He also addresses our attitude as children. What should be our attitude when we obey our parents? It's not just about obedience in verse 1, but he says, honor your father and mother. The word honor there is talking about the attitude that we have toward our parents. And sometimes as parents, we fall into the trap of emphasizing obedience, and we neglect to emphasize the importance of an attitude. What does God emphasize? Does he emphasize obedience or attitude? Well, both. He emphasizes both of them, but what's more fundamental, for us to obey or for us to do that with a good attitude? He emphasizes the attitude is the source, it's the heart of the matter. And so, you know, when you think about your obedience as a child, what is your attitude when you obey? What is your attitude when you obey? When you are told to go upstairs and clean your room, What if you went up there and you cleaned your room, but you did it with screaming and shouting and throwing things, and you come downstairs and you say, I did it, I obeyed, but did you honor your father and mother? And so Paul is telling us not just to obey our parents, but to obey them with honor. That's what it means to obey your parents in the Lord, honor them. And he gives us a promise in verse 3, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. The fifth of the Ten Commandments is honor your father and mother. So Paul is quoting from Exodus chapter 20 and Deuteronomy 5, and especially in Deuteronomy, Moses is repeating the Ten Commandments to the Israelites and giving them promises of, if you do this, then you're going to enter the land and you're going to stay in the land and it will go well with you. And so we're not entering into a land, obviously, but I think the principle here is that if you obey your parents in the Lord, then things are going to go well with you. That's a general principle. When you think about someone, they grow up and they go out and they get drunk and they get into a car accident. Or maybe they go out and they do rob a bank, or I'm just throwing out extreme examples. But wouldn't your parents have told you not to do that? Your parents would have told you not to do that. So obeying your parents would have kept you from the trouble in your life that that you would have avoided had you obeyed your parents. Your life is going to be so much easier if you obey your parents. So kids, we talked about this in our kids' Bible review, didn't we? We talked about obeying your parents in the Lord, for this is right. This is one of our memory verses that we teach them in that study. So this is what the Lord says, obey your parents in the Lord. Then he talks to us parents. And specifically, he talks to us fathers. And I think it's interesting that he doesn't specifically address mothers, although the principle would still be true for parents, both parents. But why does he address fathers specifically? Why? I think it goes back to the point that fathers are the head of the family. And we, as fathers, sometimes we, as fathers, we say, well, the mom is the one who is with the kids more often than anybody else. And so they're the ones who are really going to be bringing up the children. That's not what this passage says. This passage addresses us fathers. We bring up our children in the Lord. And so it's our responsibility to lead in that. And Paul begins by giving us a warning. Do not provoke our children to anger. Do not provoke our children to anger. How would we do that? I think about that a lot of times as a father. How am I provoking my children to anger? It might be by me having too harsh of rules. It may be because I'm inconsistent with my discipline, but maybe it's because of my anger. Maybe I am expressing anger, and so it's stimulating anger in them. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 1 says this, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I think that really applies to us parents, doesn't it? That if we are answering our children or saying something or laying out an expectation for them, how are we saying that? Are we saying that in a harsh way, or are we saying that in a way that is going to dissipate some anger? So we do not provoke our children to wrath. We avoid doing that by not directing anger towards them and about them. But then he goes even further and he says, you bring them up. You bring them up. And this is a strong word here. It's a word that means to nourish, to nurture. You bring them up. You raise them in the Lord. And this is our service to our children. Our service to our children is to do what is right for them, not necessarily what is convenient for me. Sometimes parenting can be very inconvenient. It's time-consuming. It's really draining sometimes. But it's a blessing. Children are a blessing to us. And so raising our children is about serving our children, doing what is best for them, even though it may be uncomfortable or unnatural. One of the examples that I think has been impactful for me is King David. So King David obviously was a man after God's own heart. But if you turn to 1 Kings chapter 1 in verse 5 and 6, we read about one of King David's sons named Adonijah. And Adonijah is a grown man at this point, but listen to what it says. Now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, "Now I will be king." So he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen with 50 men to run before him. So he's rebelling against his father. His father is old at this point, and so someone is going to need to take his place. At this point, it's clear that Solomon is going to be the next king. But Adonijah is rebelling against his king's wishes. In verse 6, we learn the reason why. His father had never crossed him at any time by asking him, "Why have you done so?" So David had never disciplined Adonijah, his son. He had never disciplined him to respect. He had never disciplined him to, he never asked him, you know, to give an account for why he had done something. And so he grew up with this attitude that I can do whatever I want. And so when we do not have any rules, whenever we do not nurture, we do not bring up our children in the way we ought to, then they're going to ultimately rebel, not just against us, but against God himself. And that's what Adonijah is doing here. And so it's imperative for us that we take the time to hold ourselves accountable, that we are serving our children. Going back to this idea of service, this is how us fathers and us mothers, this is how we are in subject to one another. Not that, you know, we flip the authority here, that the children are the boss. That's not the point, but that we render service to our children. We are there for them. We don't make them the center of everything. We don't give them everything that they want, but we render self-sacrifice to them. Parenting, and this is something I've thought of a lot of, parenting is a daily exercise in self-sacrifice. You parents agree with that? That parenting is a daily exercise in self-sacrifice, whether we're changing a diaper or preparing a meal or taking the time to teach or discipline or just, and I'm not saying that parenting is awful. I'm not, I hope I don't give that impression, but I'm saying that sometimes the days are difficult. And so it's a daily exercise in laying aside what we want to do for what is good for our children. The most important thing Paul says to us fathers, though, is that we need to have the right focus. We need to have the right focus. How do we bring up our children? In the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And so this is what we ought to be. This is our goal here. We are bringing up our children to serve and honor God. In the first century, when Paul would have been writing this, he would have been writing to fathers whose number one job was to educate their children. So a father in the first century, one of their primary job was to make sure his children, especially his sons, got a good education so they could become a part of society. They would memorize parts of the Iliad and some of Homer's writings so that they could talk about the things that people talk about in society and so that they could become a contributing part of society. But Paul says that's not our focus as fathers and as mothers. Our focus is to discipline them in the teaching and instruction of the Lord. This is our focus. This is where we should be nurturing and educating our children. Go back to Deuteronomy chapter 6 for just a couple of minutes. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4 is one of my favorite passages on parenting and just about our service to God. Moses says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart." Let's stop right there for just a minute. Moses is telling us that this is what it's all about, to love God with everything we have and to write his words on our heart. This is what it means to be a sincere follower of God. But in verse 7, right after that, he shows us the result of this. If we love God with everything we have and his words are on our heart, this is what's going to happen. "You shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates." And sometimes we take this very literally, and we, you know, cross-stitch Bible verses, or we paint them on a poster, we put them on our wall, and that's great. Those are great reminders. But if those words are not in our hearts and in our minds, they're not doing us any good. But the point that I'm making here is that if we fulfill the greatest command, not perfectly, but if we strive to love the Lord with all of our heart and all of our soul and to have God's word on our hearts always, there is always going to be time to teach our children about God. There is always going to be time to teach our children about God, no matter what we're doing. If you look at verse 7 again, he says to teach these words diligently to our sons. And then he gives us two pairs. Teach them, talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way. No matter what you're doing, if you're sitting down or you're walking, you have a time, you have an opportunity. I have an opportunity to teach my children. Or if I'm lying down at night or I'm rising up in the morning, I have an opportunity to teach my children. So these two pairs show us there is always time to teach our children. Sometimes as parents, we make excuses for ourselves. And I'm saying that because I have made excuses. These are some of the excuses that I have made for not taking the time to read to my children from the Bible or to just talk to them about life because I don't have a lot of time. Really? I don't have enough time to do that? Well, they're so busy playing with their toys, I don't want to interrupt them. Or, you know, they're distracted. They want to do other things. Or maybe I say to myself, I don't know how to teach. Well, again, this goes back to what Moses is telling us here. That if I love God with everything that I have, and God's words are on my mind constantly, then I'm going to make time. Then I'm going to be there with them. Those aren't just excuses, but they're symptoms of us, fathers, not loving the Lord with all of our hearts and His word not being on our minds. So we need to take the time to do that. Bring our children up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. The third relationship Paul talks about and addresses is the slave relationship. Now, one of the things we have to address right off the bat is this hurdle about slavery, right? Slavery, we usually think of the slavery that was in the South pre-Civil War. And in some cases, slavery was like that in the first century. It could be cruel. Slaves were viewed as property. But we wonder, well, what is Paul saying slavery is okay here? The thing I would say about that is that Paul is not condoning or condemning slavery in this passage. This passage is not about the rightness or the wrongness of slavery. What Paul is doing instead is he's just speaking to the realities of the day. If you're a slave, that's the reality you're in. This is how you serve God in that reality. So Paul is not saying it's wrong. Paul is not saying it's right. Now, there are wrong things about slavery. There are things that I'm not sure are necessarily wrong about slavery. But Paul's greatest concern is not to overcome slavery or overturn it, but to answer the question of how do we serve God wherever I am? And we go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 to see that Paul says to slaves, if you became a Christian when you were a slave, don't worry about it. And if you're able to become free, then do that. But, you know, understand that even if you're a slave, you're the Lord's freedman. You're free in Christ. Paul is not really worried about our physical circumstances. He's worried about how we're serving Christ in those circumstances. So just wanted to throw that out there for your consideration. The reason that slaves and masters are included in this section right after family relationships is because often families had household slaves. And so you would have a household like Lydia's household in Acts 16, where she was baptized and all her household. Perhaps there would have been slaves there. Many times whole households were converted together. So these are just household relationships here. What Paul says to slaves is that in verse 5, you are to be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh as to Christ. Again, this is addressing the motivation or the allegiance. You know, you serve your master because of the fact that you serve Christ. He says, you have a master according to the flesh. Yes. You have someone that you answer to that you physically, you know, in body, you can stand in front of and you can see that person. But there is someone who's greater than that. You answer ultimately to Jesus as your master. So whatever you do to serve your physical master, you're doing that to serve your heavenly master, Jesus Christ. He is the one to serve because he is your ultimate master. Then he addresses the attitude. So he addresses the attitude that, slaves ought to have, that they should, in verse 6, and I find this interesting, to serve not by way of eye service as men pleasers. In other words, you know, be sincere in your service. Don't just work well whenever people are watching you, whenever your master is standing over you, just so he thinks you're a good worker. But the question we need to ask ourselves as we apply this is, you know, do I work well whenever no one's watching me? Whenever I'm, you know, in my own cubicle, or whenever I'm out on the job and I'm the only one there, what's my work ethic like? Am I working well for the Lord? There was no one there to see me and, praise me and pat me on the back and say, you know, you're due for a promotion. But the Lord is there and he's watching us and he's saying, you're doing your best. Whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord, not to men. And so our attitude needs to be the same, that we are working to serve God in whatever we are doing. And I think that's the hardest thing. That's the steepest challenge he gives us, is to work hard. Your reward is not your paycheck. Your reward, he says, is whatever God gives to you, because you are glorifying him. And here's one of those places in the Bible where we find an intersection between our religious life and our work life. He doesn't say, okay, now that you're at work, you can stop being a Christian. No, when you go to work, you continue being a Christian, and you serve, and you work, and you encourage, and you influence your those around you, and you do your best because you are a Christian. And so the reason we ought to serve well, the reason we ought to work with a good work ethic, is because we are serving God. And that's what he says to slaves. But finally, he addresses masters, those who are in a position of authority. And read with me again what he says in verse 9. Masters, do the same things to them. Now that's interesting. If I were a master, I would be reading this, if I was reading this for the first time, I would be surprised by this. You mean to tell me that I need to do the same thing that you just told my slaves to do for me? Paul says, yes, you do the same things for them. You mean I have to respect my slave the same way you're commanding him to respect me? That's exactly what Paul is saying. What's the common denominator between what Paul says to the slave and what Paul says to the master? The common denominator is, be subject to one another. You serve because you fear Christ with selflessness, with humility. And the specific example Paul gives is that you are to give up this threatening. You are to give up this heavy-handed way of dealing with your slaves. Sometimes when we're in a position of authority, we think it's okay just to threaten people and just to throw a weight around just because we are the big man. Paul says, don't do that. You may have authority, but that's not your place. Give up threatening. There are better ways to generate respect and generate obedience than to threaten and intimidate people. That's not the way Christians live. That's not the way we are. That's not the way Christ lived. So he says, stop that. Instead, and what Colossians says, Colossians chapter 4, verse 1, grant to your slaves justice and fairness. Treat them with respect. Now, looking at this passage, there's not a whole lot of things that would have been surprising in the first century written about wives being subject to their husbands, children obeying their parents, and slaves obeying their masters. That's what everyone believed in. But the thing that's surprising is what Paul says to the husbands is, you love your wives. And what he says to the fathers is, you bring them up not in the world, but in the Lord. And what he says to masters is, you treat your slaves with fairness and justice. Those are the things that would have been surprising in the first century. And the reason why Paul says this to the masters is because you have a master in heaven too. He says, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. So when you get to the day of judgment as a master, and you stand before God, you say, well, I had the authority to do whatever I wanted to. And so you need to be partial to me. You need to be, you know, give me some slack here. And God says, no, I am an impartial. I'm going to judge you the exact same way I'm judging your slave. How well did he serve you? That's what I'm going to judge him on. And how well did you serve those under you? Not rule them with a heavy hand. How well did you serve them? like Christ serves us. And that's what we're going to be judged on. So regardless of our earthly standing, God is going to judge us impartially. If we're in a position of authority, regardless of what it is, none of us are, we own slaves here, right? We don't do that. But if you're in a position of authority, then that job is not about bossing people around. That job is about serving others. There's always accountability to God in heaven. No one is excused from this. You remember the story of Onesimus and Philemon? And the story is that Onesimus was this runaway slave that Paul came in contact with. He belonged to Philemon. And this letter is being written to Philemon to return the slave to him. Apparently, Onesimus had become a Christian because of Paul's teaching. And the relationship between Onesimus and Philemon changed. Notice what Paul writes in Philemon verses 15 and 16. "For perhaps he was for this reason separated from you for a while, that you would have him back forever, no longer as a slave, but more than a slave, a beloved brother, especially to me, but how much more to you, both in the flesh and to the Lord." When we are in relationships with, when Christians are in work relationships with one another, it's not just a work relationship, a business relationship, and that's it. It is a brother-brother relationship, or a whatever it is, brother-sister, or sister-sister relationship. We are family in the Lord. And so what Paul is saying is, you treat him not just as your slave. He remained his slave as long as Philemon had that authority over him. But he's your brother now, so treat him that way. Treat him with fairness and treat him with justice. And so it really just all goes back to serving in the way that Christ would have us to serve. So as we bring this to application tonight, a couple questions. First of all, where do I fit in here? Obviously, none of us are a slave. Obviously, none of us are masters. But some of us are employees, and some of us are employers. And if we're a part of a family, we're children, or we're fathers, or we're husbands, or our wives. We all have somewhere we can plug into here. And we all can see that there's something that this passage tells me about how I'm to serve the Lord and walk according to my calling in my relationships. Serve the Lord. And that's the last question. Who are you really serving in life? Are you serving yourself? Are you serving just your boss? Are you serving just people, or are you serving the Lord? Who are you living for as to the Lord? We ought to be living as to the Lord. And so that's the lesson tonight. If you'll grab your songbook and turn to the song number 354. If you're not serving the Lord tonight, if you can't really say that, yeah, I in all my relationships, I am doing this for the Lord, I'm a Christian. If you can't say that, maybe because you're not a Christian at all, or maybe because your relationship with God is broken, this is an invitation for you to make that right before Him. If that's something you need to do privately, then do that. There's nothing stopping you from doing that except yourself, just to go to the Lord in prayer. But if that's something you need to do with your brothers and sisters' help, if you want to become a Christian, you want to be baptized into Christ, then do that tonight. Why would you wait? You know what the gospel teaches. And so do that now as we stand and as we sing.